ततो जयं मुदीरये
ततो जयं मुदीरये
नष्टप्रेषु भद्रेषु
नष्टप्रेषु भद्रेषु
नित्यं भागवतु
सेवया
भागवते उत्तम श्लोके
भगवते उत्तम श्लोके
भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके
भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके.
So we continue to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, chapter 18, entitled The Residents of Jambudvip Offer Prayers, text number 11. Yat sangalabdha nijjavirya vaibhava
Yat sangalabdha nijjavirya vaibhava
Tirtam muhum samsprishatam himanasam
Tirtam muhum samsprishatam himanasam
Haratya janta suti virgatam gajam
Haratya janta suti virgatam gajam
Kovai nasivita mukunda vikrama
Kovai nasivita mukunda vikrama
Yat of whom?
Of whom?
The devotees.
The devotees.
Sangalabdham.
Sangalabdham.
Achieved by the association.
Achieved by the association.
Nijjavirya vaibhavam.
Nijjavirya vaibhavam.
Whose influence is uncommon.
Whose influence is uncommon.
Tirtha,
Tirtha.
Holy places like the Ganges.
Holy places like the Ganges.
Mohu,
Mohu,
repeatedly.
Sanspritam,
Sanspritam, of those touching,
of those touching.
He,
certainly,
certainly. Manasam,
Manasam,
the dirty things in the mind,
the dirty things in the mind.
Arati,
Arati,
vanquishes,
vanquishes.
Aja,
Aja,
the supreme unborn.
The supreme unborn.
Antaha,
Antaha.
In the core of the heart.
In the core of the heart.
Shruti be.
Shruti be.
By the ears.
By the ears.
Gataha.
Gataha.
Entered.
Entered.
Angajam.
Angajam.
Dirty things or infections of the body.
Dirty things or infections of the body.
Kaha.
Kaha.
Who?
Who?
Vai,
vai,
indeed,
indeed.
Na,
na,
not,
not.
Sevita,
Sevita,
would serve,
would serve.
Mukunda Vikrama,
Mukunda Vikrama,
the glorious activities of Mukunda,
the glorious activities of Mukunda,
the supreme personality of Godhead,
the supreme personality of Godhead.
Is there any chance to get a little water?
Someone is taking care of it.
Someone, very good. Translation. By associating with persons for whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, is the all in all, one can hear of his powerful activities and soon come to understand them. The activities of Mukunda are so potent that simply by hearing of them, one immediately associates with the Lord. For a person who constantly and very eagerly hears narrations of the Lord's powerful activities, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, in the form of sound vibration, enters within his heart and cleanses it of all contamination. On the other hand, although bathing in the Ganges diminishes bodily contaminations and infections, this process and the process of visiting holy places can cleanse the heart only after a long time. Therefore, who is the sane man who will not associate with devotees to quickly perfect his life? Purport. Bathing in the Ganges can certainly cure one of many infectious diseases, but it cannot cleanse one's materially attached mind, which creates all kinds of contaminations in material existence. However, one who directly associates with the Supreme Lord by hearing of his activities cleanses the dirt from his mind and very soon comes to Krishna consciousness. Sutta Goswami confirms this in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. Sinvatam svakata krishna punya sravana kirtana ridyantastohi abhidrani vidunati suritsatam. The Supreme Lord, within everyone's heart becomes very pleased when a person hears narrations of his activities, and he personally cleanses the dirt from the mind of the listener. He washes off all dirt from the mind. Material existence is caused by dirty things within the mind. If one can cleanse his mind, he immediately comes to his original position of Krishna consciousness, and thus his life becomes successful. Therefore, all the great saints in the devotional line very strongly recommend the process of hearing. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra to give everyone a chance to hear Krishna's holy name. For by simply hearing Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one becomes purified. Chaito Dharpana Marjanam. Therefore, our Krishna consciousness movement is chiefly engaged in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra all over the world. After one's mind becomes cleansed by chanting Hare Krishna, one gradually comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness and then reads books like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Nectar of Devotion. In this way, one becomes more and more purified of material contamination. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.18, Nastapriyesu abhadresu nityam bhagavata siriya bhagavati uttama sloke bhakti bhavati naistiki. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed, and loving service to the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. In this way, simply by hearing of the powerful activities of the Lord, the devotee's heart becomes almost completely cleansed of material contamination, and thus his original position as a servant who is part and parcel of the Lord becomes manifest. While the devotee engages in devotional service, the passionate and ignorant modes of material nature are gradually vanquished, and then he acts only in the mode of goodness. At that time he becomes happy and gradually advances in Krishna consciousness. All the great acharyas strongly recommend that people be given a chance to hear about the Supreme Lord. Then success is assured. The more we cleanse the dirt of material attachments from our hearts, the more we will be attracted by Krishna's name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and activities. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. Om Jnana Tinanana Syakinandana Salakaya Shakshuna Gitam Yatasmai Shri Gurave. So this Krishna consciousness movement is extraordinary because it is said Tadvak Visargo Janataga Viplavo. It can bring about a revolution in a misguided, misdirected civilization and totally transform people to a point which is inconceivable. It is amazing how powerful this movement actually is and how much people change. And it is equally amazing that those that in the beginning stages one thinks that I'm not changing a bit, I'm not advancing at all, I'm still the same. And yet this movement is extraordinarily powerful. We are being transformed very, very rapidly into devotees of Krishna. And just the very fact to know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extraordinarily rare. We're seeing that there are people who have taken a very high birth in terms of culture, just like we were taking darshan and we heard how that South Indian Brahmana was chanting Sanskrit verses in glorification of Lord Nrisingadev in a way which is really beyond us, right? There's no way we could possibly ever pull that one off, right? And even if someone could, then it would be like, he would be famous overnight. Right? We would fly him all over the world for different festivals to recite like that. Because such reciting is not part of our background. Once I was in India, and I gave this lecture, and during the lecture there was one aristocratic man present, very well dressed and fine features, looked formidable. This man started during the end of the lecture to breathe very heavily. And I knew that very soon he was going to erupt, and he did, you know, at the end he erupted, and he said, "Oh, you spoke about Krishna, you spoke about Krishnatu." He said, "Ka for Kala, Ra Rakta, and Sa for Sukla, three Yugi Narayan." Ah, indeed, Krishnatu, three Yugi Narayan is there. And he gave this whole explanation, how Sukla means the white incarnation, Lord Kapila Dev, and so on. He was describing Lord Yajna. He was describing three Yugi Narayan. Very nice. So I mentioned to him that, well, we appreciate that very much, you know, because it is true. All the incarnations are certainly included in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. But beyond that, the Vaishnava Acharyas give still a higher meaning of the word Krishna. They explain that Krishna means, comes from Akarsan, or he who can attract, all living beings, and includes the word Anant, and that will bring the greatest happiness. So when he heard that, the man got ecstatic symptoms and started to exclaim very loudly, and I was very impressed. So it turned out that he was a Sanskrit professor, the head of a Sanskrit college, and very learned. But immediately he accepted us as giving a higher conclusion, and he kind of offered his respects. Now, who am I? Some village pumpkin from the Dutch clay. I cannot even pronounce Sanskrit, and I'm not going to try either. I always get, when I have to write it, I always put the H's in the wrong places. So I've given up for this lifetime as far as Sanskrit and all that, or even Vedic culture. But the conclusion that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been so deeply entrenched in our consciousness. And anyone who associates with this movement develops that faith. Yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So powerful is this movement. I met one devotee, he said, "I'm not chanting anymore." I said, "Oh." He said, "But I'm still Krishna conscious." Yes, to some extent, yes. One still knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one's not chanting. So powerful is this movement. Of course, to attract the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one has to chant the holy name. And to continue the process of purifying the mind, as is described in this verse, one should never, ever give up the chanting of the holy name, no matter what happens. Even if there's a calamity, no reason to stop. People have stopped over different calamities. One devotee's family all died in a car accident. He stopped chanting for some time. Someone else had a problem, the spiritual master left. That devotee stopped chanting for some time. But this is unfortunate, because no matter what happens in this world, our position never changes, because we are the eternal servant of Krishna. So being the eternal servant of Krishna, that can never change, no matter what happens. Therefore, once you know, once we receive that special mercy, that we are the eternal servant of Krishna, then that means whatever happens, right? Whether it is wonderful or whether it is terrible, nothing changes. We remain the eternal servant of Krishna in all conditions of life, forever. Can't change that. And therefore, our position remains the same. We must chant the holy name. And the chanting of the holy name is not a process. It is not merely some sadhana. It is said that the chanting of the holy name is both sadhana and sadhya, or it is both the process for purification of the mind and the heart, and the process for making spiritual advancement, as well as the goal of spiritual life. And therefore, sometimes that question was raised, and Prabhupada answered that, what comes from chanting?
Prabhupada answered, more chanting.
And this is true. It will be like that. Chanting will go on forever. It is not that one can ever say, finished my rounds, right? There's no such thing. I know the temptation is there to sometimes say that. I also sometimes feel like that. Finished my rounds. But actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura states in Jiva Dharma that the reason why we count our rounds is not to simply make sure that we are fulfilling the quota. He said, but rather the reason why we are counting our rounds is to make sure that we are increasing. Yeah? And we are increasing our chanting. So this is the purpose. It is not, sometimes the discussion comes, should one actually chant 64 rounds? Didn't Srila Bhakti Siddhanta say whoever chants less than 64 is fallen? And didn't Prabhupada then make it 32 for higher griva? And didn't higher griva say 32? And then Prabhupada said 16, no less. Right? Isn't that the case? Well, fallen we are. That may be a fact. I don't think we should ever think of ourselves as being not fallen. We should understand, yes, we are fallen. But still, if we chant a minimum of 16 rounds daily, that is sufficient to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Lord, because Srila Prabhupada has specifically invoked the mercy of the Lord. He has made that adjustment. Sometimes I'm comparing that to the ocean. There is the ocean and the beach. Right? And the ocean is just turning over in waves and then washing onto the beach. And up and down. And the water leaves a line on the beach, a mark on the beach where the water has been. So if I may compare this, the land to the Vedic culture. And the Vedic culture has its customs and its practices and its transcendental processes and standards and so forth, for by which one can become purified and attain the mercy of the Lord. Then we see how the ocean, we may compare that to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, which is washing on that Vedic beach. And somewhere there is a demarcation line. Somewhere there is a line between the strict standards of Vedic culture and the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Now, in this age, we need not follow everything of Vedic culture. It's no longer possible. Now, in this age, for some matter, some things, we are simply, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, relieved from these finer details, and we're simply taking the mercy in the process of chanting the holy name. It is also sometimes compared that Vedic culture was the goldsmith's hammer, very fine reforming process, very fine reformation process. Whereas it is said that the Sankirtan movement is like the sledgehammer of the blacksmith. In one blow, the whole thing is done. That definitely we can relate to that better, isn't it? And this very refined process of becoming purified is very difficult for us. But just in one blow, that's more our style, for most of us. So this blacksmith hammer is the holy name. In one blow, it purifies our heart. Now, as I was in my metaphor, my other metaphor of the beach and the ocean, then the point was that the water line is moving a little bit because the waves on the beach are moving. So somewhere one can determine the demarcation line between Vedic tradition and the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And it is Srila Prabhupada, as the founder acharya of this movement, who has marked that demarcation line. He has said, yes, up to here, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya reaches. And beyond that, one must follow. Yeah? Up to here, one must follow Vedic injunctions, Vedic rules. And up to here, alright, not necessary. Like that. Like, sometimes in India, we hear these things like, tomatoes on Ekadasi, my God, and they faint, right? But in ISKCON, we're not afraid to dip our French fries in tomato chutney. In Hari Bhakti Vilas also, it is said that if you eat on Ekadasi, right? Has anyone ever eaten on Ekadasi? Many hands are up, and some are shy to admit. Yes, it is said, there is one verse which mentions that next birth is a hawk. So, we would certainly be in trouble. But fortunately, by the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya and of the Acharya, in this movement it's alright to have French fries even with some tomato chutney. And still, it will not be an impediment for going back to Godhead as long as one takes very strictly and diligently to the process of the blacksmith hammer. That hammer we have to lift. One cannot say, oh, it's so heavy, I cannot do it. Right? Pray to Lord Balaram or to Lord Nityananda, because he gives spiritual strength by which one can lift the sword of knowledge, or the, in this case, the hammer of knowledge, by which one can seriously take this process. So, whatever we do, we must chant Hare Krishna. We must not give up this process of chanting Hare Krishna. And with it, we must follow four regulative principles. But even if we cannot follow four regulative principles, we should still chant Hare Krishna. Whatever we do, we should never stop to chant Hare Krishna. Even if the mind tells us that I can't do it anymore, do it anyway. Somehow or other, don't throw away this very rare opportunity to receive the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is such a special time, inconceivable. In all of the entire kalpa, this is the most extraordinary time. So all that is required is that we chant this holy name of the Lord and endeavor to follow four regulative principles, and certainly we become eligible for the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So that's my message before I will leave from here, and all of us are leaving. Many of us are now, after having been here at the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the mercy of the devotees, we have done a lot of ecstatic chanting, ecstatic hearing from many Vaishnavas, and more to come. Many will be leaving today, some will be leaving tomorrow. I must also leave very quickly after this class, in half an hour actually, to make it for the Sunday feast in Heidelberg. So it was very nice to be with you, and I hope we will soon meet again. I was asked to make a quick plug, which I will do. Those who want to join on the boat festival with Satchinandan Swami and myself, which is on from June 21st to 27th, can contact Gauravamini from Abhantoya and inquire about what it takes to go 1 week on the boat with Satchinandan Swami and myself. Thank you very much.
Shalakaya, Saksuramitam Yena, Tasmai Shri Guru. Continue on that point, which is never stop the chanting. and last Thursday on the Singha Chaturthi day, I was asked to the class in Munich Temple, and quite spontaneously, so I had no time to prepare anything, and I got the first canto with the verse of the day of the sequence, and first I thought, well, today we should lecture from the seventh canto. But then when I opened that verse, which was in the sequence, and I read it, and although that verse was not at all mentioning Nisringadev or was connected to him, I got such a strong inspiration that yes, this verse is perfectly fitting to this day. And I would like to to read that verse to you and to share that inspiration with you, which I got from that verse. It is the text 45 from the chapter 9, where Bhishma Dev is passing away, and you're just at the point where Bhishma Dev. Where Bhishma Dev is doing his last breath, and then it's not okay now, it's better. So Bhishma Dev is just doing his last breath, and then fixing his eyes on the form of Krishna who is standing before him, he's leaving his body. And then this verse is spoken by Śrīla Gosvāmī. Tatra dundubhayo nidu deva manava varita shashamsu sagavo rāgyān kapetu puṣpa vṛṣṭayaha. Thereafter, both men and demigods sounded drums in honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect. I'm sorry, this is the verse afterwards. It's this verse here. Sambhatyamana magyaya bhishmam brahmani nishkale sarveva bhuvuste tushnim vayansi varinatyaye. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent, like birds at the end of the day. And I read the last sentence of the purport of Srila Prabhupada. Bhishma Dev, as a pure devotee of the Lord, entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets, where the Lord in his eternal form of Pata Sarati predominates over the unconditioned living beings who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. The love and affection which binds the Lord and devotee are exhibited in the case of Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev never forgot the Lord in his transcendental feature as Pata Sarati, and the Lord was presently personally before He was present personally before Bhishma Dev while he was passing to the transcendental world. That is the highest perfection of life. So now how is this verse related to Srinisinghadev? Well, it's easy. Etavat Sankhya Yoga Vyam Sotharva Paranishtaya Janma Labha Parapumsan Ante Narayana Spriti. The supreme acquirement we can get from our birth as a human being, Janma Lab, the thing we can get from the birth as a human being is Ante Narayana Smriti, that at the end, when we give up the body, we can remember the Lord in one of his forms. Because this is the actual, this is the perfection of life, as Prabhupada mentions here. That somehow or other, our whole life as devotee should be directed to that goal, that at the end we can remember Krishna. And this end will come, if you allow, I would like to read a small passage from my novel to illustrate that point about the death. The scene is here is a Kshatriya monastery in the Himalaya mountains, like about 1,000 years after Krishna in the degrading Vedic culture. So the king of the country is entering the monastery, and he's the real Kshatriya, this king. He's mighty, proud, and joyously, joyful person. And then there is a very, very old monk in this monastery. Everyone thinks he's he became too old, his mind isn't working. He's the only Bhagavad in this book, and nobody understands him because they are all too degraded. So when the king sees that monk, he's immediately bowing down before him. And all his entourage is also following, they all bow down except of one. And this is Kali, who is disguised as the person servant of the king. And then Kali is speaking to Manu, the hero of the novel. Seeing this scene, this mighty king bowing down before this small, really old, humble monk who is standing there. And Kali speaks, actually, the first time in this book. As you see, even the mighty in this world bow down before someone. No matter how much power you may acquire, there is always one who is more powerful. And in the end, it may be as if we had defeated all our enemies. But one remains, and he is the might of all might. He is the death. Nobody can defeat him. He is our final master. Before him, everyone will bow down. But nobody wants to hear that, and therefore the whole world is dancing madly in the wild dance of his lusty desires. Kali is speaking about death. And so this is the crucial point of our life when we come to death. And then our task is we have to remember Krishna somehow or other. So who is helping us to remember Krishna at the end of life? Bhishma Dev is a different case. First of all, Bhishma Dev, he's not only a Mahabhagavat, one of the 12 Mahajanas, who is always in direct association with Krishna. So for him it's natural to remember Krishna always. We are not on that platform, at least most of us are not on that platform. And also Bhishma Dev, he's actually the master of death, because he got the benediction from his father that he can determine the point of his death at any time. So he was waiting till Krishna came and till he could pass on his heritage to Yudhishthira, because Bhishma Dev, he was the bearer of the Dharma in the Guru ways. He was the grandson, the grandfather. He was the person who was keeping the Dharma upright in this glorious dynasty. So he was passing on that heritage to Yudhishthira by preaching to him and instructing him in this Dharma. And in the end, he decides, now I can leave this planet, I have fulfilled my duty, and Krishna is here present. So now I can leave, and he is living in full Krishna consciousness. So who of us will be able to do this at the end of his life? We have not the slightest idea how long we will live. We may leave that place and die immediately. I had three relatives who had such an experience. The one, he was some sports pilot. He made a three-quarter looping and he just slammed in the ground before 3,000 people here. It was some air show. It was a big, big thing on newspapers. They all what happened. Maybe he lost consciousness because it was too heavy gravitatory force. We don't know. His brother he went to hospital to some routine examination, some stomach pain, and they had to, you know, to examine it. And his wife came and he stood up and to go to the bathroom. He fell on the ground unconscious. His wife took him on his lap. He opened his eyes and said, "My dear wife, what is going on?" He died. Nobody knows why. And his wife, a year later, she went through Munich City on shopping tour, and she passed one building, and on the roof, some workers were repairing the roof, and one of them was losing his hammer, and the hammer fell right on her head. Dead immediately. We don't know. We also have famous and not so famous devotees in our movement who just died. Mala Dimanjari is publishing a book about Ladini Mataji, one Prabhupada disciple who was shot in Algeria in a revolution. Those heavy guys, they entered the temple, they wanted to, you know, harass the devotees, and she just stood up and went in front and said, "You don't touch our devotees," and they shot her immediately dead. So we don't know when Krishna will take our life. So who will guarantee us that we will be protected of forgetting Krishna? So I thought, when I read that verse, I thought, yes, this is Nisinga Dev. Because he is the person who is protecting us from the greatest dangers in life. What is the greatest danger of the body? To forget Krishna at the end of his life. And there are some other thoughts in his mind, some other desires, some other feelings. So, and for us in Kali Yuga, it's especially the Lord. It's very nicely mentioned in the 12th canto, in the Bhumi Gita. There's a verse which says, Pungshan kalikrito doshan dravya krishatna zampavan sarvan harati chittastu bhagavan purushottamaha. In this age of Kali, it is said, all items, all things, all places, and even the nature of all human beings are polluted by innumerable faults and mistakes. But someone who takes Krishna in his heart, and chittastu means putting Krishna in the heart, then Krishna can take away all these faults and all these obstacles from the life of the body. This is how Maharaj mentioned also the special mercy in this age. Because we are so unqualified, Krishna helps. And who is this person in the heart? Vidhuni Singho, Paradhuni Singho, Bohini Singho, Kridoyeni Singho, Nisingadev is in the heart. So, and to realize this, that we are dependent on Nisingadev to help us to remember Krishna at the end of his life, I think this is a wonderful meditation on the Lord. I had two extremely dramatic experiences in my own life about such a thing. I had two car accidents in my devotee life. The first one, I was driving myself. I was still a bhakta, just before initiation. And we came back from a Suri Sankran festival. Everyone completely exhausted and happy, and you know. And so I was driving, and we planned to load the books on that day. So I had to chant my rounds while driving, because there was no time to chant later. And I was chanting, and you know, and the road was straight on, you know, this from Basel, Freiburg, always straight on, no car on the street, and bright sun in January. And I was chanting, and suddenly everything was blocked, there was some traffic jam, and I just, you know, drove in with 120 kilometers, and there was no chance to control the van. And I slammed in the side plank, and the car fell down, and it was completely broken. Nobody was hurt, except of me a little bit. But, you know, the real catastrophe was, I was chanting my rounds. And then when I got to see there is some danger, and first I tried to go to the side path, and I saw there was a car hanging in the side path, so I couldn't go that way, and I lost control and stopped chanting. I just stopped chanting, and bang, and it was crashing. And it was such a deep shock for me. It was actually the most humiliating experience in my whole devotee life. This seeing that you're chanting your rounds, and then the point when it comes to really chant at the end of your life, maybe, I stopped chanting. I really, for months, I was depressed and shocked from that. I was unable to do anything. It was such a It was really humiliating. Then 2 years later, I just came back from India, and that time I was on the passenger seat, and we were leaving from Abenteuer. We had to pick up some machine or something, I forgot, and we left the van. It was in December, and so there I was chanting Japa in the temple, and said, please come with us, so I continued to chant Japa on the passenger seat. And then that devotee left the village, and he full gas, passionate guy, and we were in a hurry. And then there was some ice on the road, and he went so quickly, the car went like this, chuck! And he couldn't even steer, and we shot away from the road, and there was a deep ditch like that, like this high, a ditch, and with 70 kilometers, slammed on this ditch, and I was looking at this ditch, and it came near, it was such a horrible thing, really to see death coming. And at that time, I started to chant like anything, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like anything. And we slammed in that ditch, and I was thrown against the ceiling with such a heavy blow, and I was thrown back. I had no safety belt, and back on the seat, and I couldn't breathe for 15 minutes. I was just lying on the field, and such a pain for months. But I was so ecstatic, because at that time, I chanted, and it was actually, I thought, this was the first time in my life that I really chanted Hare Krishna, that moment. First time was the super gao, I'm saying, you know, the greatest imaginable accident they have is from nuclear power, which can happen if you stop chanting at the end of your life. And second time it went, of course I became very proud. I just came from Vrindavan, Bhakti Shastri course, and now I got it, now I know how to chant at the end of my life. But it's only later I had this scene often in my mind, very, very often, because it was death coming, and Krishna protecting me. It was really not me who invoked that chanting. This intense, you know, really crying with everything I had in all, every nerve, every cell was crying Hare Krishna. And this was, Krishna himself. When this thing I did, deep in the heart. So he gave the impetus to chant. And I strongly feel that this is one of the main things we can ask in the Singadev. If we chant, Abhayam, 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 Abhayam. Maybe we should chant that together. Om Namo Singhaya Namaste Jaste Jaste Aviravi Bhavavacha Nakavacha Dakstra Kamashaya Nandaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Saha Abhayam Abhayam Atmani Purishta Om Sraam. This Abhayam Abhayam Atmani Purishta. Atmani Purishta, please be present in my heart and take away all fear, Abhayam. So the greatest fear everybody has is the fear that at the end, or should have, is the fear that at the end of my life I forget Krishna, I forget to chant, I forget to think of Krishna. And the Singadev can take away that fear very easily. So many devotees we heard who went to die. And then many of them didn't anymore follow the process. But then when they go to die, Krishna calls them, and suddenly they remember Krishna. And I just remember that one incident when Pritutabhu wrote us a letter from Vrindavan. I think it was in summer 1994. It was also in Nisinga Chaturdashi, I think. It was a festival here, and he wrote us a letter that Nam Hadaprabhu left his body. He came to Vrindavan, he didn't practice the process anymore, but somehow he was dying of AIDS and he came. And then they put him in bed, Aindraprabhu was singing Kirtan, and he was just there, they held a picture of Krishna before him. And then Pritaprabhu wrote it at the very end, just a few minutes, when he was really really unconscious and he couldn't move anymore. Suddenly he got up, he was in the tent, he was, miracle, miracle, he was looking in the sky, like seeing something wonderful, and all the body's presence, that he was seeing Krishna personally, who appeared before his eyes, and then he left very Krishna consciousness. So this is the greatest blessing I think we can ask from the Singha Devi, that he helps us to be free from that fear to forget Krishna at the end of our life, and instead give us the remembrance of Krishna and help us to chant Hare Krishna, and then our life is perfect, as Prabhupada says. That is the highest perfection of life, to see Krishna and remember him in our days. Okay, thank you very much.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeyaham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shagana Raghunathan Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamsya He Krishna Karunar Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanto Radha Kanto Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namo Mahabhadannaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauradvishe Namaha Vrindaya Tulasi Devaya Priyai Keshavashyascha Krishna Bhakti Prade Devi Sattvatai Namo Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyai Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhya Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivashali Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
I'd just like to speak a little bit on the Bhagavatam verse that we chanted. It was the essence, in fact, of the whole process of Krishna consciousness. And where Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita left off, kind of, where he spoke the essence of the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, 64, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. In the end, he says, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vrajaha. So the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and in fact the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, is Sharanagati. Real spiritual life begins with Sharanagati. When Srila Vyasadeva was composing Srimad Bhagavatam, he made it very explicit that those who enter into the study and practice of Srimad Bhagavatam must be nirmatsar, that is, without envy, and only then is he a satam, one who is situated in the absolute truth. Sadhu, another name for sadhu is satam. And satang means one who is situated in the absolute truth, sat. And Sharanagati is the symptom of a sadhu, the six limbs, the six angas. And if we are receiving Krishna's mercy, if we are receiving the pure devotee's mercy, is manifested in what degree we are surrendered to Krishna. And these can be actually gauged, measured by, first of all, how much we are enthusiastic, attracted to perform those activities which are favorable to enhance our devotion, enhance our attachment and attraction to chanting, performing devotional service, serving the Vaishnavas, wanting constantly to desire to stay in the dham, hear Bhagavatam attentively, and worship the Lord with faith. That is the first limb of Sharanagati. And simultaneously, to develop an apathy, develop a distaste for that which is a hindrance, a block to performing devotional service. It is not that it happens automatically. Nothing happens automatically. It has to be an effort. Because we should not forget that all living entities, especially in Kali Yuga, are born in an ocean of desire which is there in the seed form, Icha and Dvesha, Samudhena. Dvesha means hate. Dvesha means anusua, means envy. Because we have been envious of the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Enjoyer and has been a competitor for us, because we want to play the Supreme Enjoyer. The original hate, the original violence has gripped our heart. Now they don't just go away, even if we would wish them away. We have to work hard. The word satya and sadhana and bhajan, they all come from the root, especially bhajan comes bhaj dhatu, which means something has to be done. It's an active participation, not a passive, lackadaisical attitude. Sharanagati is therefore the sixth symptoms which shows whether we are advancing or not. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically requests all Vaishnavas to reserve Ekadasis at least for days for introspection. It is not a day which is specifically meant for eating less or fasting from grains. That is simply a side effect, in fact, of what the main instruction is. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is singing, Madhava Tithi Bhukti Janani Jatane Palana Kori. Another name for Ekadashi is Madhava Tithi. Anything which has an intimate relationship with Madhav Krishna is known as Madhav Tithi. And Madhav Tithi is being described by Bhakti Vinod Thakur as Bhakti Janani. Janani is mother. Mother is one who we have received birth from. So the one who gives birth to bhakti is Madhav Pithi. And unless it is Jatane Palana Kori, unless it is very cautiously, carefully, diligently not performed, then bhakti will not appear in our hearts. So one of the very important aspects of observing Ekadasi, Madhav Tithi, is introspection. How much have I developed detachment from those things which are hindrances in spiritual life, and how much attraction have I attained for those things which will enhance my spiritual life? I have to develop the attitude that Krishna will protect me under all circumstances. Rakhashikti Vishasha. That come what may, just like Prahlad Maharaj had absolutely no doubt that Krishna would protect him. Goptritre Varanam Tatha. And I surrender myself. On one hand, I have full faith that Krishna will protect me under all circumstances. And on the other hand, I surrender myself fully to Krishna's protection and depend on him for everything, just like a wife depends on the husband. Goptritte varanam tatha. Now, this particular example might sound rather obsolete in the Western world, but it is better to just take the essence. The essence is to be fully dependent on Krishna. Atma Karpanya and Atma Nikshepa. Karpanya means to always feel humble, to know that I am very insignificant, I'm incomplete, I'm imperfect. Never will there be a time when I will be able to reach the platform which is described in the first verse of Ishopanishad, Purnam. Krishna is described as Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam. Purnat Purnam Udachyate. What is or who is Purnam? Anything which is subtracted from Purnam is also Purnam, and where it has been subtracted from, the sum total remains Purnam, complete, whole. That is the nature of the Absolute. This stage we will, as Tathastha Shakti of Krishna, the marginal potency of Krishna, never attain. This is a philosophical understanding of our real position. If we don't have already, due to our previous Sukriti, that humility, then let us understand our insignificant position through the application of higher intelligence and scriptural guidance. If we are always humble, then the desire to beg for Krishna's and Guru's mercy will always be present in our consciousness. Atma Nivedan or Atma Nikshep. Nikshep, the word means to throw oneself. Nikshep. Nikrishte, one is ni, means fully, without an afterthought, without a forethought, without any condition, when one throws himself or herself at Krishna's lotus feet, is known as Atma Nikshep. Now, nowhere in this verse the word Atma has been used except in the case of Atma Nikshep, as we know that Atma has many connotations, it's not just the soul, but it's the body, mind and the soul. So surrender constitutes when all three are surrendered to Krishna. And this process of Sharanagati will then lead us to higher understanding, higher levels of sadhana and bhajan. But until and unless we vary, consciously develop these six different limbs of surrender, nothing will happen automatically. So it is exhorted by all the acharyas, the reason why so many books have been written, commentaries have been written, commentaries to commentaries have been written and will go on being written, is because to make us aware that nothing will happen automatically, to completely direct our mind to understanding that the Vaishnava meaning of surrender is both marjada nai and markat nai. I think I'm taking up too much. I'll just end this with this very interesting discussion that Vaishnavas, especially in the South, have regarding what is Sharanagati or surrender. Madhvacharya, who was in our line, like Goshinamani Prabhu was talking about Narayana Smriti, Ante, Ante Kale Chamam, Evam, Smaran, Muktva Kalevaram. So at the time of leaving the body, one must think of Krishna. Then, Saratat Bhava Bhavita. Then you will acquire that platform which is transcendental, where I exist, Krishna says. You will come to me. So Madhvacharya says, yes. In order to remember Krishna, we have to fully depend on our capacity. We must prepare ourselves, our consciousness, our sadhana to that extent that at the time when we leave our body, we must be able to think about Krishna, smara, remember Krishna. That is known as the markat Kumar Nai. Markat is a monkey and Kumar is a baby. So if those who have been in Vrindavan and have observed the pranks of monkeys would have noticed, amongst many others, there's one particular thing that is rather unusual. That is, the baby monkey has to be always aware of where the mother is. The mother is not so much concerned. And in the face of danger, it is the baby monkey who has to run to the mother's shelter to escape danger, because the mother does not usually come back to pick up the baby. And when the mother is jumping from one tree to the other, it is the duty of the baby to hang on to the mother. If it loses its grip, it falls down to its death. So that is a logic or illusion which was given by Madhvacharya, known as Markat Kumar Nay. Through these different aphorisms, one can, by analogy, one can understand the principles better. So that was his contention, that if you want to remember Krishna at the end of your life, then you have to practice and prepare yourself. Later, when Sri Ramanujacharya came of the Sri Sampradaya, he formulated this particular verse where one has to remember Krishna at the end of the of his life. He said, no, it is the duty of Krishna. Because, but only if one has practiced diligently and sincerely the process of Krishna consciousness, then it becomes Krishna's duty to protect, just like the Marjada Kuanna, that Marjada is a cat. A cat is always very concerned about its kitten. And whenever it sees danger, it runs, grips the kitten on the neck, on top, and lifts it up. And the kitten totally relaxes its body and becomes that way much less weighty than it actually is. And it's easy for the mother to carry the cat into safety. So this should be our attitude, that we should be like cats. That was Srila Ramanujacharya's contention. But Srila Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami formulated what is known as Yukta Vairagya. That means we have to apply both these aphorisms, both these analogies. We have to hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna so that under no circumstances does our grip get dislodged. Simultaneously, we totally surrender body, mind and words and soul at the lotus of Krishna so that he can easily lift us up out of this material ocean just by the tuft of hair. The sikha symbolizes that. So he can lift us out of this ocean. So I would like to round up or conclude this little realizations I had from listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam verse is that yes, Krishna's mercy, the Parampara's mercy, all the Vaishnava's mercy are already there. It is not that by our invocation that they start flowing. On the contrary, even if we don't invoke their mercy, it is there, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And at the same time, Prabhupada is to say that if you want the sunlight, you have to leave the room to go outside. The sun is not going to penetrate through the roof and enlighten us. So the effort of going out to receive the sunlight, to become enlightened, and the sunlight which is already shining, we don't have to chant specific mantras or do some mystic rituals to raise the sun every morning in the east. It is already there. Both are very, very essential, and we should not neglect either. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Prajarine Nirvishyashunyavadi Pashyatyadeshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Vibhasindhyayacha Avidhanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevyo Hey Krishna Karna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Upika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasa Nigora Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The theme of today's Bhagavatam verse was Sadhu Sangha association with devotees. I want to relate this topic to the verse that we chant to Nrsingadeva, which is written up here to the right. Sri Nrsingha Jai Nrsingha Jai Jai Nrsinghade Prahladesha Jaya Padma Bhukha Padma Bringha. So the word Jaya comes up four times. And of course, Jaya means victory. Sometimes we translate as glories, but more technically it means victory. And we may wonder, well, what are we saying? Jai Nrsingha. Victory Nrsingha, literally. So, victory to Nrsingadeva? Well, yes, victory to Nrsingadeva, and also victory to us who are remembering and glorifying Nrsingadeva. And of course, victory is the opposite of defeat. In life, we are all pursuing our various activities, hoping to be successful in them. In Krishna consciousness, we have learned that there is a supreme goal, and we aspire to attain that goal. And we aspire in this life to at least secure our position on the path in the next life. If not, to go all the way back home, back to Godhead in this life. Both options are a victory for us. We come into anxiety thinking about the possibility of defeat in this particular matter. And that is appropriate to have this concern, because we know the greatest reward is before us. What a great shame it would be, not just a shame, indeed the ultimate defeat would be to lose track of that perfect gain. I was thinking two points. One is a sort of silly example, but maybe it will help make a point. Some weeks ago, I went to a circus. I confess. The Zippo Circus came to Oxford, and it was just one block away. And the first night, they offered reduced price. I think it was their dress rehearsal, so it was only going to cost £3 or something. So a few of us, the devotees in Oxford, we decided, when was the last time I went to a circus? Maybe when I was 10 years old. It's time to go to the circus again. And to justify myself, I recall the statement of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Yukta haraviharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasya yukta sapnama bodhasa yoga bhavati dukkaha. That there is, when there is moderation or balance in the matter of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation, then one can free oneself from all miseries. Well, indeed, this circus was a lot of fun. One of the acts in the circus was a juggler act. It was a very kind of classical, old-fashioned European circus with the horses and trained parakeets and the high wire balancing and the juggling. And the juggler, very expert juggler, after he did some of his more routine juggling tricks, he brought out three big white rings, sort of like now they have frisbees with a big hole in the middle. So he had three of these like frisbees, and he passed them out to people in the crowd. And they were supposed to throw these frisbees one after another toward this juggler man, and his objective was to do the wonderful trick of inserting his head, catching this flying frisbee around his neck without, you know, catching with his hands. So he had to run, you know, go like that. So it kind of depended on a little bit of skill from the person in the audience, and it depended on, you know, the expertise of this circus fellow. So two of the people in the audience, they were fairly good at aiming, so that the man didn't have to run so far, and he could catch. But the third man, he just couldn't really get it right, so he kept throwing it way too far, or way too short, or way over here. And the man would run, and he would miss. And he would pick up the one that had fallen, and he would give back to the other two also, so that all three, he had to get all three before he was going to be satisfied. He kept giving back to this third man, who kept throwing it impossibly far away from his fellow. And the juggler was getting exhausted and exasperated by all of this. But on about the fifth try, he made it. He got all three, and as the third ring came around this man's neck, everyone just applauded and cheered like anything. Everyone was so happy, and I applauded and cheered like anything because I was so happy too. Because you were just kind of drawn into this, you know, thing that had to be done. And you really felt, now it's got to be done. Well, of course, his particular goal in this game was just something purposeless, except some entertainment. But the dynamics of what happened there was what the anthropologists call communitis, the coming together of a community. For a few seconds, for a few moments, happened in the circus tent, where everyone had the same goal, the same desire. And, of course, these people didn't know the word jaya, but that was kind of the feeling. I had the sense that this is what we're aiming for in Krishna consciousness. And this happens in a community of devotees. It's not happening alone. There's no victory alone in Krishna consciousness. I just, now you mentioned Icchadvesha, desire and aversion, we say, or hatred. And I just realized the word dvesha is dva-isha. Two ishas, two lords. So there's a sense of competition. There may be God, but I am also God. And that's where the problem starts. So there's no victory alone, but there's also no victory of being a competitor with the Lord. So then where is there victory? There is victory where all the devotees together are working, are aiming, and we've heard now about this effort to aim, to progress back home, back to Godhead, and to be ready for the mercy that comes from the Lord. Now, all right, we hear that. We have to be together, we have to have a common aim. But there's an additional point which I learned a couple of days ago from our Dr. Leela Dar Gupta. Don't know if he's here at the moment, but he made a very nice observation which I found was very helpful for myself. That in Indian culture, society means three generations. I know that in Dr. Gupta's case, he lives with his father and his own family, his wife and children. I visited at their home, very nice home in Vrindavan. And I was struck because he had commented to me the day before that his father had said to him, you should not travel, you should not do this traveling at this time. And he had immediately obeyed, no question. He's a grown man, but he didn't argue with his father. And I noticed, and this I found very interesting. And I asked him about it. He said, society means three generations. When you have three generations together, then you have culture. Because each of the generations is interacting with the other generations. And a dynamic develops whereby everything holds together very nicely and there is proper understanding of the principle of respect. And respect, of course, is the essence of Vaishnava or Sadachar, basic principle. So I was, of course, immediately thinking about my own experience and also about our experience in the Krishna consciousness movement. My own experience, which is probably common to many or most of us here, we did not grow up with our grandparents in the house. My grandparents lived 1,000 miles away, and we visited them once every 2 or 3 years. And they were just kind of, they were nice, but they were a bit strange. And we just didn't really get to know them very much. And there was not really a relation. And this is very much characteristic of Western culture. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we are also suffering from this, and I think it's very much a reflection of our own backgrounds. And I am hoping, praying, and waiting for when the kind of three-generation scheme will manifest in our society. I think at that point we can say, yes, this Krishna consciousness movement is secure now. It's going to survive and thrive. I wrote an article. I was requested to write an article for the Journal of Vaishnava Studies, which is edited by Satyaraj Prabhu in New York since several years. It's a scholarly journal, which he puts out twice a year. And each issue he dedicates to one theme. This particular issue that was coming up and which has now just come out, he dedicated to His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was known by several scholars who agreed also to write about him because they were strongly influenced and inspired by him. I was asked to write an article for that journal as well. And there I spoke on this topic that, or I wrote on this topic, that you have, in a society, you have juniors, we say bhaktis, bhaktis. You have seniors. Then you have something else. You have elders. And then beyond elders, in the invisible plane, you have ancestors. Now, we usually think of ancestor worship in the mode of ignorance. But in Krishna consciousness, we have devotional ancestors. All of the Vaishnava Acharyas who have departed this world, they are our Vaishnava ancestors. And we need to, I explain, we need to bridge the gap between the visible culture and this invisible culture. And how do we do this? We do this in many ways, but the main point I was making in this context is the need for elders, that they are giving us this bridge, they are carrying us across, they are helping us to see that invisible. And my point in this particular article, I was explaining that as I knew Tamal Krishna Goswami, he had spent some months living in Oxford. We had become quite close. It was a great shock when he left us a year ago. That he was a senior. He was one of the most senior, most of the senior devotees in ISKCON. And he was, in a sense, on the threshold of becoming an elder. For whatever reason, we don't know. Well, we can say, yes, we know, because Krishna wanted him, Prabhupada wanted him for other service elsewhere. He was taken from us. But my own lamentation was that this most important member of our society suddenly was taken away. It also, though, became impetus for me to understand. We have to understand a little more. We have to start learning how to live as three generations, if not more. three generations. And in this way, there is continuity. In this way, there will be strength, collective strength, which then gives us individual strength, by which this sense of victory that we're all hankering for can come. Sri Nasinga Jaya Nasinga Jaya Jaya Nasinga Dev Prahadesh Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Rinda Sri Nasinga Jaya Nasinga Jaya Jaya Nasinga Dev Prahadesh Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Rinda Sri Nasinga Jaya Nasinga Jaya Jaya Nasinga Dev Prahladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Rinda Shri Shri Pala Lakshmi Nasingadeva Ki Jaya.